Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in Matthew 11, and we're going to continue with verse 27, where Jesus Christ, after finishing explaining certain things to his people about the iniquities of different cities and the degree and the severity of their iniquity, and he was comparing, especially Capernaum, it was an exalted one. A lot of people were, you know, they had a lot of high education, so-called, you know, the high education schools there, and a city that was well-to-do financially. And so obviously they developed this attitude of arrogance and haughtiness, and they thought they're above all. And in essence, Jesus Christ told them that you have the same attitudes that they had in Sodom and Gomorrah. You see, they had plenty. It was a place that looked like the Garden of Eden, and they had abundance. And so they developed those attitudes of pride and arrogance and haughtiness. You know, we're self-sufficient, we don't need anybody else, we are wise and mighty. You see, all kind of things like that. He says, in the process, you develop the same attitude just like they did. So he compared them to Sodom and Gomorrah. And then he told them and warned them that, in essence, if they continue to be that way, which obviously they did, unfortunately, that they're going to be destroyed as a city, as an entity. And then in the judgment day, when they all appear before the judgment day, along with Sodom and Gomorrah and all the other nations and cities and peoples, Sodom and Gomorrah is going to get it a little bit more easy than they did, because they knew better, and he appeared to them in person, while the people of Sodom and Gomorrah never knew anything about the law of God. And that's in essence what he's saying to every single one of us, as James would say, and many others of the disciples in different ways, you know. The more we have, the more accountable we're going to be for what we have. And so, in verse 26, it says, "Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in your sight." That's the way the Father looks at it, you know, about all things. And things are not different today, because that's the same God yesterday, today, and forever. And so, in verse 27, we continue now. "All things have been delivered to me by my Father." You see, he's the head of all things, he's the source of all things, he's the head of the religion, he's the source of the religion, and therefore the people of God were to be called by the name of the congregation, or the Edah, the body of witnesses. And we went through this concept very thoroughly in the first series, so go back to it to understand what does it mean, church. You see, a lot of people, you know, they talk about church and they don't know what it means, and they think, well, no, church means Christian. It's a Christian thing, you know, you don't find it in Islam or in Judaism. No, all church means is a body of witnesses, and they could witness either to the truth that God gave them, or obviously in other religions, a witness to whatever information they were given, you know, mixture of truth and error. And so the Father is the head of it all, you see, and he put Jesus Christ to be the head of the body, and the body becomes his, and the body becomes his wife, just like Israel. He's his wife, and he was the head of the wife in Sinai, and so he's going to become the head of the wife of the future Israel, all the same people, and some more grafted ones among the nations, who are going to be restored to him, and to God, and to worship, you know, the religion of God, because the religion of Christ and the religion of God are exactly the same. They're not two different religions, one for the Jews and one for the so-called the Gentile church, you see. And so that's what he's saying here. All things have been delivered to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father. Now, you may think that you do. A lot of people say, well, I know the Lord. He says, no, you don't. You see, unless the Father calls us and begets us and gives us his Spirit, you see, and when he does it, he expects us to function and walk in his religion. You see, otherwise, why would he become our Father if we reject his religion and call it Jewish? You know, it's the religion of the Old Testament, of that other God. You see, there's an awful lot of insanity out there that masquerades for something else. And all people are in it, unfortunately, with a very few. And that's why God warned us, come out of this Babylon, this confusion, because it is of the devil and not of me. Otherwise, you're going to be partakers of her plagues. And so he says, no man, nobody really knows me except the Father, and unless the Father reveals his Son in us, as Paul later on would say, to his own people, and also to the Galatians, and he said it to everybody else, to whomsoever, you know, he spoke to. And he told them, specific to the Galatians, he said, about all the kind of life that he had before that. In Galatians chapter 1, verse 13, for you have heard of my former conduct in Judaism, you see, which was a mixture of the law of God and rabbinic, unfortunately, how I persecuted the church of God, the body of witnesses of God, you see, and the people of God, in Judah were also the church of God, but, they were not those who followed Christ, their God, their creator, their husband, and they did not receive his spirit. So that's when a distinction began to be made between both. And then later on, the Gentile church began to develop its own terminology to distinguish, between both. But it says, I persecuted the church of God, the congregation of God, the body of witnesses of God. You see, it's of God, it's not of Christ. You see, some people forget that. And beyond measure, because that's only terminology that generally they use, whenever they introduced themselves, or when they spoke about the people of God, they always introduced them as the church of God, you see. And also the church of Christ, obviously, because Christ is the husband, the to-be, and the bridegroom. But first and foremost, it is the church of God. It's not the church of so-and-so, Methodist, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Catholic, this and that. I mean, all kind of names that they give them, you see. Either they are of God or they are not. And if they are of God, they are the church of God. And if the Father has his Spirit in them and reveals his Son in them, you see, Jesus Christ, then they are his. And if he did not, they can call themselves any given name. It's neither here nor there. Christ is going to tell every single one of them, I never knew you. And so he says, in time past, I persecuted the church of God beyond measure and tried to destroy it. Imagine that, a man who thinks that he serves God as touching the righteousness which is of the law, he said to his people, blameless, you see. And so he thought he was doing the will of God. And many people think that they do the will of God when they do their own. And they don't know the difference, you see. And in essence, by doing that, he was of the devil, not of God. And yet he thought he was of God, because after all, he's got the right religion. And these people are, just heretics, they're developing this crazy idea about a man being the son of God. And so he said in verse 14, and I advanced in Judaism, that is in the Jewish religion, beyond many of my contemporaries. And as I explained before that, we have to know the difference between biblical Judaism, you see, that is the religion of Judah that is of the Bible, as all the prophets walked in before that, and the religion that later on began to develop when the rabbis, began to take over, you see, by default, because the priests, were not doing their job properly. And so gradually they began to divert people away from the law of God. But still, in the days of Jesus Christ, still most of them still walked in the law of God, still sat in the seat of Moses, as Christ affirmed, in Matthew 23, and still had the authority to make decisions that were binding decisions. And Christ backed it up by telling his own people, Matthew 23, you can read it in the beginning, they sit in the seat of Moses, the Pharisees and the scribes, that is, teaching the law of Moses, that's all it means. And there was a literal seat in the synagogue, but that's basically what it means. You teach the law of Moses, but obviously when you begin to teach your own law, it's no longer the law of Moses. But as long as they were sitting in the seat of Moses and teaching the law of Moses, he said, you better do what they tell you to do. You better believe them. You better walk in what they say. Just don't follow their example, which is not, of the law of Moses, because that was the double standard there. But that was on a personal basis, their own personal problems, They teach one thing and they do something else. But still they recognize the fact that they were teaching the law of Moses. And so when you read about Judaism, you have to understand which Judaism we're talking about. And so he said, I advanced in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my fathers. And some traditions were good, of the Bible, of Moses, and some were not. So you have to also differentiate between the two and not just think, well, all traditions are of men. No, they are not. You see, traditions means, the teachings of God that were being passed on, that is, from generation to generation. And if they are of God, you have to find out by checking it with the Bible. And if they are not, well, discard them, regardless of who is teaching it. In verse 15, he said, but when it pleased God. You see, there has to come a time when it pleases God to do a certain thing. the father of Jesus. He is the one that initiated the process. We don't. We don't wake up one day and say, oh, I'd love to, you know, I'd love to worship God, or I want to walk, you know, in God's way, and I want to give my heart to the Lord, and so forth. There's no such a thing. When it pleases God, just like when it pleases the President of the United States to call you for a meeting, that's the only time you can go there. You cannot go initiate that, you know, call the White House and say, I want to talk to the President. You see? Or the CEO of a corporation, you know, for which you work, or things like that. It doesn't work like that. It has to come from the top. And yet people think, you know, I'm the one that determines whether I come to God or not, whether I go to Christ or not, whether I give my heart to the Lord or not. Oh no, the Father initiates all that. If he hasn't done that, that's wishful thinking on our part. And that's all it is, and it's going to be a human religion. It may have a lot of truth in it, but still it's going to be a human religion, because it's going to be mixed up. You see, a lot of people don't realize that, and because they're not studying the Word of God, they just, you know, go after the teachings of their own churches and charismatic teachers or whatever it may be. And so he made it very plain. That's the way it works. When it pleased God, when it pleased the Father, when it pleased the El Elyon, the Most High, who separated me from my mother's womb, it's him who did it, not Christ. That's not the job of Christ to do it. You see, and the calling is not the job of Christ. Christ is the one that receives them from the Father once the Father calls them and begets them and tells Christ, I want you to take care of these kids, you know, these children. I want you to be formed in them. And that's what he's saying here. When it pleased God who separated me from my mother's womb and called me through his grace, you see, I didn't deserve it. And that's where the grace comes. And it came because God had a purpose in mind for this man, the Apostle Paul. And so he says, when it pleased God who separated me from my mother's womb and called me through his grace, he's the one that does the calling, not Christ. Even though he said to his disciples, you have not chosen me, I chose you. You see, he prayed to the Father to ask him, you know, are these the people that you want? So I have to understand also what he's talking about there. He does not initiate. The Father does. You see, because he's the second in command and not the first one. And that's how the two of them are one, because they both agree on the same thing. There's no disagreement there. And so he says, when it pleased the Father to reveal his Son in me, you see, it's only when God does that, that's when you begin to do the will of God. And if the Father hasn't done that, you know, you're spinning your own wheels on your own, and you're going to go in circles, and you're going to, you know, deceive yourself that you're standing. And Paul said, he that thinks that he stands, take heed lest he fall. If the Father did not initiate this process of calling you, and then begetting you, and then giving you the Holy Spirit that comes from him to make you his son, and then gives you to Jesus Christ, and then reveals his Son in you on a daily basis through the law that came from the Father. That's how he reveals Christ in you. In other words, to know what is the mind of Christ. And the mind of Christ is made of the very teachings that the Father put in his mind and heart, and that he obeyed when he was in the flesh. And it's the same law that both of them have had from the beginning and gave it to man from the Garden of Eden. If those things don't happen, you've got your own religion. And you can call it the religion of God all you want. You see, you function by another spirit, not the Spirit of God, and Christ is not in you, and you can praise him and worship him all you want. You can even follow him to whatever degree you do all you want. You see, if the Father hasn't initiated the process and Christ does not really live his life in you, because that's the only way he's going to begin to do it, not before that, you see, then you'll come before him one of these days thinking that you were his follower, his servant, doing all kind of things in his name, great works, preaching his gospel, so to speak, all around the earth, doing great works, you know, sacrificing your life, and he's going to tell you, I never knew you, because the only way I can know you is when the Father calls you and reveals me in you. You see, when he calls you, when you walk in his religion, the religion of my Father, my commandments which I obeyed until the end, that's the beginning of our relationship. Before that, you're playing games. You're doing your own thing. That's why he tells them, get out of here. I don't even know you. And the overwhelming majority of those who call themselves Christians are going to be in that category. That's 99.9.9%, you might say. And it's only the very few that he called, the very few, the very elect, you see, that are going to be there. They are the saints. And the whole world has been deceived by the devil and then the whore that he raised, you know, the Gentile church and all those that came from her. And they all deceived themselves, you know. We're all Christians. We're the people of Christ, you know. We follow the cross and all this rubbish, you know, from God's point of view, mixture of truth and error, which is vomit in his sight. And that's where we are, unfortunately, and have been in the past 2,000 years, in ignorance and deception. And so, well, that's what Jesus Christ is saying, you see, that the Father is the head of it all. And so he said in verse 27, all things have been delivered to me by my Father. And if the Father hasn't delivered anything to him, Christ doesn't have it. And if he hasn't delivered any one of us to Jesus Christ, Christ doesn't have us. That's why he says, I never knew you. You see, it's as simple as that. And so he says, no one knows the Son except the Father, and nor does anyone know the Father except the Son and the one to whom the Son wills to reveal him. And the Son is not going to reveal anybody to the Father, you see, unless the Father first reveals that person, you see, himself, that is, reveals himself to that person and then begins to work with that person and calls that person and then gives him to Jesus Christ. And that's the way it works. And this process is not known, nor is being taught. But the overwhelming majority of those who call themselves Christians, they think, well, everybody is a Christian. All they have to do is call upon the name of Christ, you know, and go on Sunday and keep Easter and Christmas and all those pagan holidays and eat ham, you know, and swine, you know, as the Bible calls it, and appear before God and says, oh, Lord God, you know, oh, Lord Jesus, you know, we love you and praise you and honor you and all that. And it's all a mockery, you know, the sight of God. And Christ does not recognize any of that and does not accept it. The Father doesn't accept it. And it's all a religion in vain. And that's what God says, in vain do you worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. These are not my commandments and teachings. That's why he says, I never knew you. And until people wake up, you know, because God opens their eyes, that's the only way you're going to be able to wake up. On your own, you cannot do it. But at least if you have a measure, you know, of objectivity in you, you would realize you've been taught a lot of lies, and then you'll at least, you know, seek God and ask him to open his, you know, your mind so you can see the truth for what it is, not for what you've been taught that it is. And maybe then, you know, by the will of God, he may or may not choose to do so. You cannot force him. You cannot force a relationship on him. No more than can, you know, a man go to a woman and says, I want you to love me. It doesn't work like that. You see? It has to be mutuality there. And so that's what he's saying here in essence. And then verse 28, he says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And that's again in the context of the fact that the Father is calling you and revealing you, his Son in you. If that doesn't happen, you cannot just come to Christ. Some people just go directly to this statement and say, well, anybody can come to Christ. Not anybody cannot come to Christ. That's what he just said before, that nobody knows me unless the Father reveals him. Me to you, and nobody knows the Father unless I reveal you to him, you see, and until the Father pleases to call you and deal with you, you are not of his, and you can play all the games that you want. That's reality. It has nothing to do with us, the calling. It doesn't mean because we are worthy more than others that God has called us. It has nothing to do with us. It's by the grace of God, as Paul made it very plain. You see, he decides. He says, I like this one at this time, and I'm going to deal with him. And he can go to a family and pick up only one, the least likely, oftentimes, to be called and chosen and work with that one. And the others that seem to be even better, in their own sight at least, more righteous and kind, he's not even dealing with them. Yet they think that they're all the people of Christ or the people of God. And so always remember, when you study this kind of statements, it's in the context of that. You see, that process, that God has to initiate the whole thing. And then, now that he did, then he says to these people, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, not arrogant, not haughty, not proud, as the people of Sodom and Gomorrah were, or Capernaum, or other places. All those, generally speaking, the religious people, they tend to be haughty and arrogant, you know, we're God's pets, you know, we're God's people. I'm holier than thou, I'm righteous. You know, we've got the best religion. You're the infidels, we're the believers, and so forth. All these attitudes that you see out there, anything but humility and meekness. And even if somebody is contrary to the faith and you know that he is, you have humility to recognize the fact that it's only by the grace of God that I've been called and I am what I am. And I wish that God would call my brother too, but if he doesn't choose at this time, I'm not going to put him down. and say I'm holier than thou, and I'm the believer and you're the infidel. You see, everybody in his order and everybody in his own time. And that's what we're commanded, to love all men. You see, to live at peace with all men, not at war. And that's what these religions have been all around, you know, fighting one another. That's what the Crusaders were all about. That's where the persecution and the heretic, you know, syndrome that was there all along, both in, you know, so-called Christianity and in Islam and other place, you know, all persecuting one another. And they're making it very plain. We are not of God. That's in essence what they are saying. Otherwise, we would not act like that. You see? So that's what he's saying. Be like me. And the only way you're going to be like me, if you study his law, his nature and mind and character. That's how he revealed himself. So on one hand, to say the law is done away with, which is the nature of Christ and the nature of God and his character, what defines him, what he is. And on the other hand, to say, but we love you. You know, you're talking to a liar, a deceitful liar, who does not even know that he's a liar. A lot of people are so sick in their mind and heart that they don't know it. They don't know what they are. They look at the mirror and they don't see anything because they are blind. And they hear the word of God and they don't understand because they are deaf. And they do not have the knowledge and the understanding heart to perceive what they hear. Yet they go around, you know, thinking that they are doing okay. You know, I'm okay, you're okay. And so he says, you take my yoke and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. And you will find rest for your souls. Otherwise, you're going to have conflict and frictions and war and hatred. You see? All kind of attitudes like that which are not of God. And so it says, for my yoke, in verse 30, is easy and my burden is light. And yet people say, well, the law of God is harsh, it's grievous. And John said, oh no, the law of God, the commandments of God are not grievous. They're not. If you hate them, they will be. But if you love them and if you love the nature of God, you see, just like, you know, that statement, you know, he ain't heavy, he's my brother. What happens when you don't look at people as your own brothers? Then they become heavy. You see, that's what he's saying here. If you love me, keep my commandments, and therefore my commandments would not be a yoke to you. And in keeping them and in doing them, it will be a labor of love. And when you love someone, you know, you love a person so much, no matter what kind of burden you have to carry, it's nothing to you because you love them so much, you see. It's when we hate people that, you know, every tiny little thing that we are asked to do, like the teenager attitude, you know, every tiny little thing you try to ask them to do, or little children, oh, I can't do it, it's too much, you see. And all of us, unfortunately, to one degree or the other, are that way. That's our nature. And Christ says, you know, come, be like me. And don't be, you know, the other spirit, your father the devil, and all of us, to one degree or the other, are still his children, including the most righteous man who ever lived. You see? It takes a long time to outgrow that, to get it out of our system. It's a long process, because like cancer, he infested every cell of our spirit and our soul, and it's a long process to get it out. So don't kid ourselves, you know, that we are, you know, free of the devil. We're not. We're still his children to a degree. It's a gradual process to become the children of God. And you do it by walking in his path and constantly fighting yourself, wrestling with yourself, wrestling with the devil, wrestling with God, obeying the law of God, disciplining yourself, you know, casting all imaginations, you see, all pride and haughtiness and arrogance and things like that. And it's a long process and a hard one. And only very few, as Christ said, only very few find the narrow path, the narrow road, which is not easy. You see, and walk through. But the majority want to go through the Broadway. Well, you know, life is easy. You don't have to do much. And that's why we know we are, when we do that, we are our father the devil. So we have to recognize that. And then chapter 12, we continue in verse 1. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. That was a weekly Sabbath. And his disciples were hungry. Now, God is God of a law, and he's God of mercy, and God of grace. You see, just like to the his people, you know, he said in the 10 oracles, thou shalt not steal. You see, that's a law. You don't steal. But what happens when you walk down the road and you have no food on you and you are hungry and there are fields on both sides, either harvest, you know, grain or corn or, you know, fruit trees and things like that, and you're hungry and God is the owner of the heavens and the earth, not those people who own the land, you know, on both sides. God is, you see. And so he sends his birds over there when they're hungry and they eat. What about human beings? They're more important than birds. What does he say to human beings? On one hand, he told them, don't steal. But on the other, he said, if you're hungry, well, that's no problem. Walk over to the other side. Pick up, you know, whatever you need. You see, stick it in your mouth and eat. Don't stick it in your pocket. Don't stick it in your bag. You know, don't unload, you know, the trees or the harvest and then put it in your wagon. That's stealing. But just like the bird, you know, just take some, put it in your mouth, you see. You know, pick up a delicious apple and or peach or whatever it may be, and then you walk, you know, down the road and you eat it. You know, maybe a few, you know, just enough to keep you going, energize you. That's okay. You see? And that's what he's saying here. That's what's happening here. You know, they go through the grain fields. They don't own them. It's on the Sabbath, and they're hungry. What's the law of God? What's the law of mercy? It has been always the same. Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. It's not a new religion, a new teaching. And so he says, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. Why? Because they knew the law says you can do it. You see? And so when you go to the book of the law to know the mind of Jesus Christ, the one who gave it to them in Sinai, this is what he told them through Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 23 and verse 25. When you come into your neighbor's standing, it's not yours, it's your neighbor's, you know, standing grain, you may pluck the heads with your hand when you are hungry. Sabbath, you know, a day, any other day of the week, holiday, doesn't make any difference. You're hungry. God loves you. He cares about his children, and the field is there, and you're not stealing. You see? Even though the name, you know, that person, that owner, you know, if he couldn't care less about the law of God, he'd say, hey, get out of here, you know, I've got a gun here, and I'm going to shoot you, you know, if you touch my apples, you know, my apple tree or grain or whatever it may be. That person forgot who is God, who is the owner of all that he has. And if he continues with this attitude, God is going to take it away from him. You see, one way or the other. You see, that's a part of the law of God. So he says, when you walk into your neighbor's, your re'echa in Hebrew, again, your friend, you know, one of your relatives, anybody should be your relative, because we're all children of the same father that makes us relatives, just like they say in Hawaii, you know. We're all relatives. How do we know that? Well, we've got the same uncle, Uncle Sam. You see, that's the way they look at it there. You know, it sounds humorous. But, you know, if you all call him uncle, well, we're relatives. You know, if you all call God, our God and our Father, we're all related. You see, and that's why God used that terminology. You shall love your friend, you know, your rea, as yourself. You see, because we're all the sons of God, should be friends of each other, not enemies. And so the law is very plain. When you come into your friend's standing grain or neighbor, and this is, you know, the translation here, you may pluck the heads with your hand, but you shall not use a sickle on your neighbor's standing grain. That would be stealing. You see? So when you study the law of God, you have to study the entirety of the matter. Otherwise, you know, some people will say, well, you know, here it says in the law of God, in the Ten, you know, Commandments, as they call them, the Ten Oracles, thou shalt not steal. And don't you come in, you know, don't you dare come and touch my apple tree. You see? But you say, that's true, that's what it says. But it also says that if I walk by your tree and I'm hungry, I'm allowed to eat some. I'm not going to break any branches or unload, you know, the tree and stick it in my pocket or wagon or box or whatever it may be. You see? And if the person, you know, was ignorant of the law of God, he might be illuminated at this point. He says, oh, okay. You see? But if he is, you know, a contrary person, obviously, he says, get out of here or I'm going to shoot you. So, that's the law of God. So, you know, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Whatever law he gave in Sinai, that's exactly what the disciples live by, and it's not something new. But the ignoramuses, you know, members of the Gentile religion, they read this and think, oh, that's something new. Those poor guys, you know, couldn't have it before that. Oh, it's the same person, the same God, the same teaching, the same law, the same book, the same story, the same people. You see? But the devil has deceived the whole world, and now people don't know it anymore. You see? And so they read that and they think, well, that's our religion, you don't have that. But in contrast to that, as they were eating, you know, and plucking the heads of grain, look what happens. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath day. Now, they did not say it's not lawful to take of the grain and eat. They just say it's not lawful to do on the Sabbath day. Well, who told them that? You go told the bird, today's the Sabbath, you're not supposed to do it. You know, come any other day, you'll be welcome, but not today. You can't do that to the bird. Well, if you can't do it to the bird, why would you say it to somebody who is even much more important than the bird to God? His own son or daughter, you see, your own brother. And that's what they forgot. And so they began to invent their own law. That was rabbinic. That was not of Moses. And in that point, they were not sitting in the seat of Moses. They were speaking from their own mind. And Christ said, you worship me in vain. I'm not interested in your own doctrines and teachings. You know, I don't care what sect you are, what church you are, you know, what congregation you are, you know, who is your the head of your church, you know, Luther or somebody, you know, called Methodist or, you know, anybody. I'm interested only in my own law. Anytime you deviate from me to the right or the left, you're in the wrong and I'm in the right and will always be in the right. You see, but people don't see it that way because they do not study the entirety of the law of God. And so he said to them, here it is, their God, their maker and Lord, they don't know it, they don't see it. The one that came to Sinai and married them. And so, you know, they're having, you know, sort of, you know, the wife is having an argument with her own husband. But he said to them, have you not read? So immediately he takes into the scriptures that he gave to them. You see that he inspired and the people that he dealt with. And he takes them to an example of David. He said, he said to them, have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat. God says, it is not lawful to steal, but there is grace. There is mercy. That doesn't mean every time you're hungry, you go to the temple and says, you know, you say to the priest, you know, hand over the, you know, the bread. You see, that doesn't mean that either. There are special exceptions, you see, special cases. And generally speaking, you shouldn't be going to the temple and eating their bread there. That's holy bread, supposed to be only for the priesthood. You see, it has a symbolic reason there. But if there comes an exception like that with David, well, you know, those things don't happen all the time, and David is just not an ordinary man. He's not a disobedient person. He's a man who obeys the law of God. He knows it is wrong, but he stands there, and he did not, to begin with, he did not ask for the showbread. He was just asking, would he have a little piece of bread here for me to eat? And that's what they told him. Really sorry, we don't. The only bread we have is, you know, this is the showbread, and this is holy bread. You see? And then they made the decision to give it to him because of grace and mercy. You see, and you have to understand the entirety of the matter there. David was not a lawless person who couldn't care less about the law of God. And so he ate, you know, he ate a bread that generally was unlawful to him for him to eat. But he was not there to disobey the law of God. You know, that's how you understand the grace and the mercy of God. He has a law, yes. You see, but there are times where, you know, his law is not necessarily, you know, thrown out in contempt, but set aside for certain things, you see. But the law is still in force, you know, for all our other occasions, but not in, you know, for some particular cases. So that's what he's saying here. He entered into the house of God and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, not lawful by the law of God. You know, he himself who gave that law to Moses, Jesus Christ, and nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests. Because God said so. The one who is just speaking now to them. And they didn't recognize that, obviously. Or he said, or have you not read in the law? What's the law? The Torah that he gave. You see, he said, didn't you hear that? That on the Sabbath day, the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless. What does it mean they profane the Sabbath? God says, thou shalt not work. Don't do any manner of work on the Sabbath. But you see, there's a lot of buts in the law of God, and you don't have to play, you know, you shouldn't play games with that but, you see. But understand it and have the right attitude, because God is going to check our hearts and minds and see why we say that word but. We have to say it in accordance with the law of God, not contrary to the law of God. So there is no but ultimately speaking, you see. It's just, yes, that's what the law of God says, but also the law of God says that too, in terms of exceptions, you see. So it's not the but in the sense, you know, forget about the law of God. But understand, you know, that there are many aspects to it. And so he says, have you not heard that in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath? In other words, they have to do the sacrifices, you know, and work and things like that. But God commanded them to do it, so they're not profaning the Sabbath in the real sense. But in the sense of the law that says don't do any work on the Sabbath, they do. You see? The law says don't steal. And so when you walk into your neighbor's, you know, yard or friend or whatever it may be, and you take some of his food and you eat, you in that sense profane the law. You broke the law. You see? But not in the sense of where God says, you know, if you are hungry, it's okay. That's not breaking the law. You see, that's sort of an exception that I make there because I'm a God of grace and mercy. You see? So you have to understand that. Christ never profaned the law of God. Some people think, well, he just wanted to irk, you know, the Pharisees, and he did all kind of things just to make them angry, and he broke the law, and he broke the Sabbath, and therefore forget about the Sabbath. We don't need to keep it. You see? And so forth. That's a demonic attitude that a lot, you know, an awful lot of people have who call themselves Christians. It's not of God. They're ignorant. They don't know the law of God. They don't know all the ramifications of it, you see. And they speak from ignorance. And unfortunately, a lot of people follow them. You see, when the blind follows the blind, they all fall into the same ditch. And so he says, you know, they're blameless in doing so. Well, they're blameless because, again, God told them you can do it. But for the rest of Israel, you cannot do that kind of work, you see. So there is a difference there. Verse 6, yet I say to you that in this place there is one greater than the temple. Who can be greater than the temple but God himself? In this case, you know, the one that was sent from the Father, who is also a deity, that's what it means. You know, the word God confuses people. There is only one God. You see, the scripture tells us, the disciples wrote, there is only one God and one Lord, and both of them are God. Now that's confusion. Unless you understand what it means. There is one El Elyon, the Most High. He is a deity, he is a divine being. And there is also one Lord, the Adon. He is also a deity and a divine being. And that's the reason why you find there in the translation of John, the beginning there was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. No, the Word is not God. The Word, you see, the Word is not the Father. You see, but when you understand, you know, what it really means, you comprehend it. And because people are confused and ignorant, you know, they have all these endless debates. You know, is there one God or are there two gods? You know, two gods is idolatry because Jesus Christ said, you know, you worship God and God only, you see. Well, you know, what is he talking about then, you see? People are confused. That's why in the religion of Islam, when they knew, at least Muhammad, when he knew about that information where Jesus Christ himself, you worship God, you know, he's quoting that in the Quran, and says, you see? Christ himself said you worship God. That means, you know, you shouldn't worship Jesus Christ. That means he's not a God, you see. That's ignorance. A lot of people are ignorant there. You see? And yet they want to be teachers. And they deceive many. That's what Christ said about many who claim to be Christians. Many shall come in my name, saying that I am Christ. That means they're going to be teachers, you know, so-called Christianity, and tell the whole world about it, and deceive many. And we see it everywhere. You know, great leaders, so-called great leaders of religion that create their own religions, you see, mixture of a little bit of truth and a lot of error, or, you know, just people that are ignorant of the law of God, that just speak not knowing, you know, their right from their left. That's what James says, don't be many masters, don't be many teachers. We're going to have the greatest condemnation, and all those teachers are going to appear before the judgment seat of Christ and have to answer for the wickedness and the deception and the lies, even though they may not be malicious, just plain ignorant. People didn't call, God didn't call, they just do their own thing. You see? And so that's what he's saying here. Somebody who is standing here before you is greater than the temple. You see? And they didn't recognize that, unfortunately. So he says, yet I say to you that in this place there is one greater than the temple, but if you had known, which unfortunately you don't, what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. When God says, don't steal, but you walk down the road and you are hungry, that's not the time for the sacrifice that says, don't steal, I'm going to go on hungry, and I'm going to discipline myself, and that's my fault to begin with, that I didn't bring food with me. That's not the nature of God. Now God says, I desire mercy. This is the time for mercy, this is not the time for the law. That doesn't mean the law is done away with, it means it's set aside temporarily for this particular event, you see, or deed, or whatever it may be. And people, you know, go from one extreme to the other, either law or grace. There is no such a thing. There is a time for law, and there is a time for grace. There is a time where God is going to be merciful to us, and there is a time where God is going to clobber us and put us to death and destroy us and grind us to pieces and then rebuild us. You see, everything has a time. There's a time to kill and the time to give life, you know, as Solomon said. You know, a lot of people don't know God. They think they know Him. They've got their own false concepts of what God is. You know, if God is love, well, how come those kind of things? It's because God is love. Those things are happening to teach us lessons, to make us hate evil, and to see what are the results when we walk in our own ways. We pay the penalty, and the innocent also end up paying the penalty because of the wickedness of others, not their own, and so forth. And that's what he's saying here. If you did know, which you don't, you know, you're, you know, Pharisees, that is, in other words, so self-disciplined, like military men, they have no mercy. They're not people of mercy and grace and kindness and compassion. Those qualities are not qualities that you find in the military. They're harsh, you see. They're strict, they're disciplinarian. And people like that go there to their own homes and treat their wives and children like that. They do not have the nature of God. They don't realize, yes, God is a man of war. When you go to war, but when you go home, you're not a man of war. You're a man of peace, of kindness, and compassion, and mercy. So know when to be this way, when to be that way. And people don't know that. That's why you find people on the right, people on the left, people in between, people here, people there. Instead of having the entirety of the nature of God, there is a time for everything. You see? That's how you become like God. And not your own concept, you know, and people like to divide God, and that's how they come up with idols. You know, my God is a God of war, I'm going to be a man of war. And others say, well, my God is a God of peace, I'll never go to war. You see, that's insanity on both sides and ignorance. And so he said, if you understood it, which you don't, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. You see, he's quoting himself, you would not have condemned the guiltless. You see, in accordance with the law of God and the strictness of the law of God, you know, it may seem that they have broken the law, you know, on the Sabbath, you know, they take somebody else's food, you see. But when you understand the entirety of the law of God, you realize, no, after all, it's not breaking the law of God, and therefore when you condemn somebody, which we are so quick to do, because the nature of the devil is in all of us, to one degree or the other, that's the first thing that comes out of our mouth, you know. We see something, we immediately, with a snap judgment, say what we say, instead of consider the whole matter before we speak. As Solomon says, he that speaks before he knows the whole matter is a fool. And every single one of us is. Many times. No matter how righteous we are. Because we do not always consider the whole matter and we immediately by nature judge and evaluate and put down. You see, and pronounce judgment and so forth. And so it says, have you really understood it? Have you considered the entirety of the nature of God? You would not have done that. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And therefore, because He is the Lord of the Sabbath, you see, the day that He sanctified in the Garden of Eden and gave it to man, not a Jew, but to man, you see, and He became known as the Lord of the Sabbath. He's not the Lord of Friday. He's not the Lord of Sunday. He's not the Lord of Wednesday. He's the Lord of the Sabbath, the seventh day. And yet people who follow Him claim, I follow you, Christ, but I despise your Jewish Sabbath. And it's not Jewish. That's the Sabbath of God. He rested on that day. He did not rest on Sunday or Friday or any other day. And that exposes the liars and the thieves and the robbers of the faith of the people on this earth for what they are. Deceitful workers of whom Christ said, you better be careful of, because many will come in my name and deceive many. And how many people listen to that? And to this very day, you know, let's call it Jewish, you know, a Jewish Sabbath. You see, that's a demonic spirit that speaks, and people don't know it. He says, for the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath. You see, go to the first series where we spoke about the Sabbath and how God feels about it and what it really means. That's a day when we have a date. You know, the bridegroom having a date with the bride, that is, the bride is having a date with the bridegroom. You know, we are the bride. You see, you got to have dates with your own wife, your own mate, you know, to keep that romantic relationship going, you know, the passionate relationship. It's not just, you know, work in the kitchen or work in the yard and things like that. You see? And so we do work in the kitchen, work in the yard, but on the Sabbath God says, I want you to come and stick around with me and have a date with me. I'm going to have a romantic relationship. You know, you devote yourself to me, you know, we sing to each other, we hug each other, you know, and all kind of things like that. We, you know, we revel, you know, in the presence of each other, you see. And that's what he called himself, the Lord of the Sabbath. Now, how many who call themselves Christians believe that? You see? Well, if they keep the Sabbath, the seventh day, that's the only Sabbath. All the other days are not called Sabbath. You see, they're not commanded days of holy assembly before God, a day of rest. Well, the few that do it, you know, they understand it, and the majority go in the broad way. And the day will come when Christ will say, I never knew you. We never had one single date between us because you always insisted on coming on another day, and I was never there. And when I was there, you never showed up. You see how confused people are? That's why Christ said, you know, that serpent, you know, the devil that deceives the whole world, and his church is called the great whore, and those that came out of her, they are harlots, because they follow their mother, you know, like mother, like daughter. And they all have the same doctrines. They all keep Sunday, they all keep, you know, eat swine, they all despise the holy days of God and so forth. And that's what he's saying here, you know. The Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath, and people who don't understand it, obviously they walk in ignorance, and they do their own thing. And unfortunately, this is what the majority are. Anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.